Process over results. We favor the sensational and the extremely visible. This affects the way we judge heroes. There is little room in our consciousness for heroes who do not deliver visible results, or those heroes who focus on process rather than results. However, those who claim that they value process over result are not telling the whole truth, assuming, of course, that they are members of the human species. We often hear the semi-lie that writers do not write for glory, that artists create for the sake of art, because the activity is its own reward. True, these activities can generate a steady flow of auto-satisfaction, but this doesn't mean that artists don't crave some form of attention, or that they wouldn't be better off if they got some publicity. It doesn't mean that writers don't wake up early Saturday morning to check if the New York Times Book Review has featured their work, even if it's a very long shot, or that they don't keep checking their mailbox for that long-awaited reply from The New Yorker. Even a philosopher the caliber of Hume spent a few weeks sick in bed after the trashing of his masterpiece, what later became known as his version of the Black Swan problem, by some dim-thinking reviewer whom he knew to be wrong and to have missed his whole point. Where it gets painful is when you see one of your peers, whom you despise, heading to Stockholm for his Nobel reception. Most people engaged in the pursuits that I call concentrated spend most of their time waiting for the big day that usually never comes. True, this takes your mind away from the pettiness of life, the cappuccino that's too warm or too cold, the waiter too slow or too intrusive, the food too spicy or not enough, the overpriced hotel room that doesn't quite resemble the advertised picture. All these considerations disappear because you have your mind on much bigger and better things. But this doesn't mean that the person insulated from materialistic pursuits becomes impervious to other pains, those issuing from disrespect. Often these black swan hunters feel shame, or are made to feel shame, at not contributing. You betrayed those who had high hopes for you, they are told, increasing their feeling of guilt. The problem of lumpy payoffs isn't so much in the lack of income they entail, but the pecking order, the loss of dignity, the subtle humiliations near the water cooler. It's my great hope someday to see science and decision makers rediscover what the ancients have always known, namely that our highest currency is respect. Even economically, the individual black swan hunters aren't the ones who make the bucks. The researcher Thomas Ostebro has shown that returns on independent inventions, you take the cemetery into account, are far lower than those on venture capital. Some blindness to the odds, or an obsession with their own positive black swan, is necessary for entrepreneurs to function. The venture capitalist is the one who gets the shekels. The economist William Baumol calls this a touch of madness. This may indeed apply to all concentrated businesses. When you look at the empirical record, you not only see that venture capitalists do better than entrepreneurs, but publishers do better than writers, dealers do better than artists, and science does better than scientists. About 50% of scientific and scholarly papers, costing months, sometimes years of effort, are never truly read. The person involved in such gambles is paid in a currency other than material success: hope.